Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Trust excellence built on 40 years of experience. Visit zurichcorporate.ie to learn more about the Zurich Master Trust.
Donald Trump, as you've been hearing, has said he will appeal his criminal conviction for falsifying business records and has insisted that he paid a legal expense and there was nothing illegal. During the 40-minute news conference at Trump Tower in New York, Trump said, "If they can do this to me, they can do this to anyone." The media event comes a day after he was convicted of falsifying business records over hush money payments to Stormy Daniels, a criminal conviction, as you know. For reaction to the press conference and his conviction, I'll be joined in a moment by John Brennan, former director of the CIA. But first, let's hear another clip of Donald Trump at that press conference.
We're going to do what I have to do. I'm going to do it. And the support has been, that's why I mentioned the number of $39 million. That's why I mentioned we're up 6 points. And we went up a lot over the last month because everybody saw it was a rigged deal. It was a rigged trial. But we're going to make America great again. We're going to make it better than ever before. November 5th, remember, November 5th is the most important day in the history of our country. Thank you very much, everybody.
And as you can hear, he still has a good deal of support. John Brennan, good evening to you.
Hi, Cormac.
What's your reaction, number one, to the conviction, and number two, to this afternoon's diatribe from Donald Trump?
Well, first of all, on the conviction, there were several weeks of testimony from a variety of witnesses, as well as a lot of documentary evidence that was submitted to the jury. And this was a conviction on the part of 12 citizens who were made up that jury pool, and they were unanimous on all 34 counts. So they were the ones who had the best perspective and insight into the evidence that was behind these charges. So I think depending on sort of where you are on the political spectrum here in the United States or your attitudes toward the judicial system, the reaction is quite mixed. Republicans in Congress and a lot of Trump supporters have come out saying that they were outraged by this decision. They claim that Donald Trump was wholly innocent. But there are also people who want to believe in the judicial process here, that it's a fair one. Yes, it's imperfect. But I think the feeling is, among those, again, who respect the rule of law here in the United States, is that Donald Trump was given a fair trial. He had the opportunity to defend himself and to testify himself, which he chose not to do. But unfortunately, this whole matter has been just caught up in the political maelstrom that is ongoing here in the United States on the eve of the presidential election.
Can I touch on that for just a second? Because the fabric of democracy and the judicial system in America is under severe pressure already. And we know that since January the 6th. And I know we're in the middle of an election campaign, but my focus here on this question is on the Republican, senior elected Republican officials. How can they claim a miscarriage of justice here? How can they claim or echo the sentiments of Donald Trump this afternoon that the case was rigged, that it was a Biden prosecution, when they know that that democracy and justice in America is under such pressure?
I agree with you, Cormac. I find it hard to believe that these individuals, elected officials, can disparage our judicial process so much. I think, though, it is, if an election comes out, you know, the way they want it, they'll support it. If a trial comes out the way they want it, they'll support it. But if it's counter to what their partisan objectives and goals are, they'll denounce it. And unfortunately, I think Donald Trump has been able to galvanize so much support, not just among his MAGA base, but also among a lot of these Republican officials and members of Congress who know better. And I am very, very disappointed that they have come out with this denunciation of the judicial process and the outcome of this trial. As you point out, I do think democracy or the democratic values of this country are fraying. Whether it's a result of the polarization that exists right now in our system, which is making Congress largely dysfunctional, the fact that we have this, criticism of our judicial process and the rule of law, I think it is really undermining the confidence that a lot of Americans have in the government, and the fact that the government is supposed to be trying to carry out its responsibilities and obligations to protect American citizens. But unfortunately, politicians have just brought it down into, I think, the morass of these partisan attacks.
I don't know if you're going to be surprised by this, John. We spoke with Mick Mulvaney at the top of the programme, and he said he believed if the election were today that Donald Trump would win. He said, when I asked him, he said he'd vote for Donald Trump sooner than Joe Biden, despite the conviction.
I'm not surprised. Mick Mulvaney was his chief of staff, Donald Trump's chief of staff in the White House for a period of time. And there still are a lot of people out there who will vote for Donald Trump, even if he is a convicted felon, even if he is sentenced to prison. And there is this, tremendous, tremendous animus directed toward Joe Biden. You know, partly it's, the perceptions about his age, but also I just think it's rooted in sort of this ideological fervor that Donald Trump has been able to whip up in terms of nativist sentiment here in the United States, the xenophobia, the anti-immigrant, the undemocratic positions that they've adopted. So I am just very, very disheartened by what I see happening here in the United States. And Donald Trump is not the sole cause of it, but certainly he has been an accelerant. He has poured fuel on a lot of the sentiments out there that I think are, again, inconsistent with American values.
Trump wasn't sentenced. That'll happen in a couple of weeks. But what is the likelihood of prison? Widely, I'm reading that it's very unlikely, that it's likely to be a fine and some community service and so on. Is there any, if it's not prison, is there any sanction that could hurt him?
Well, it is a lot to be determined at this point. Sentencing will take place on July 11th, so we have a good 5 or 6 weeks before that happens. And the sentence is going to depend on the classification of the felonies. And it's a Class D, which is the lowest level of felonies in the New York State legal system. But also it's going to depend on how remorseful Donald Trump is or and his behavior between now and the sentencing.
Sounds like zero, John.
So he's going to have to go. Well, yes, I think, we saw that in this press conference that he just held. He's still very combative on this issue. He is somebody who does not have the ability to be either sorry or embarrassed or ashamed at all. And so he's going to continue to fight. So I do think it's probably unlikely that he's going to be sentenced to prison or will find his way into prison. It's not implausible under certain scenarios, but he's certainly going to pursue a rather rigorous appeal process that will be initiated after the sentencing that could delay the implementation of that sentence for some period of time. But Donald Trump has demonstrated time and time again that he will use every legal trick and every appellate option to prevent his being held to account.
Can I ask your opinion on how you think this could change the campaign and his tussle with Joe Biden, particularly in debates, John?
Yes, well, we have the debate coming up at the end of June here, the first debate. It's certainly going to be a dominant piece within the media attention and all of the pundits out there going to be talking about this. I'd like to think that President Biden will steer clear of making any comments that are going to be seen as disparaging of Trump in terms of his legal problems. I think Joe Biden needs to stay sort of above this. He is the president of the United States. He is the sitting president of the United States. He can continue to attack Donald Trump on his policies and on his platforms and other types of things. But it's between now and November 5th, there's the debates, there are the conventions, and there are going to be continued, ad campaigns on both sides that I don't know how this is going to come out. And, if the election were held today or on November 5th, I think it's still a toss-up how it's going to come out. But a lot's going to depend on what happens between now and Election Day.
Really? You think it's possible that Donald Trump could win?
I didn't think it was possible in 2016 that he was going to win. But I think because of a number of factors, it really pushed him, over the finish line. We already see that the Kremlin has come out with a statement saying that, this is just the Trump verdict is just an attempt by his rivals to try to prevent him from regaining office. So, I mean, the people and the elements that are signing up to Trump's position, I think, reflects just the nature of the political discourse taking place right now. I think Vladimir Putin very much hopes that Donald Trump will be reelected as a way to save Putin in Ukraine, because I think Donald Trump would reduce significantly U.S. support, military and economic assistance to Ukraine.
Well, you preempted...
There are a lot of things...
Sorry, you preempted a question there that I was going to ask you, because you previously said that Donald Trump wasn't qualified in terms of security, certainly, and generally to be president. But if he were to be elected a second time, the shackles would be off then. And you'd have possibly a vindictive Donald Trump in the White House. What would it mean in terms of foreign policy and security on issues like Ukraine and Russia or Israel and Gaza or the China element of the discussion? What would that mean, in your opinion?
Well, I think a Trump presidency, a second one, as you point out, I think it would be rather unbridled. He would go sort of all out on some of these areas. I think he'd be very pro-Russian, and I think he would try to ensure that Ukraine was going to basically capitulate to some type of Russian-designed settlement in Ukraine. I also think that Donald Trump would not be supportive at all of a two-state solution on Israel and the Palestinians. I don't think he would give the Palestinians basically any basis for hope that their legitimate rights would be protected. I think on China, he would be using a cudgel as opposed to a scalpel in terms of how you're going to deal with issues related to Chinese trade and technological developments and other things along those lines. And even Taiwan, I don't think he would back up, you know, the very, I think, strong rhetoric of the Biden administration in terms of defending Taiwan against China. And on the domestic front, I think he would weaponize the institutions of government, those institutions that help keep our country strong and safe during his first presidency. I think he would weaponize the Department of Justice, the FBI. I think he would put, you know, his acolytes in charge of the intelligence community and my old organization, the CIA. So I think it's just a very dangerous time. I think he would go after a lot of his political rivals and try to use trumped up charges to punish those that had the audacity to challenge him in any way.
You know, if Trump were here, he'd say, John Brennan is a longtime adversary of mine. Don't listen to him. That's the type of stuff he says. But can I bring your expertise closer to home here? Because there are politicians in Europe that say the EU needs to beef up militarily and defensively because of the prospect of what Putin could do. If Trump were in power in the White House, and I think you've alluded to this certainly, would it embolden Putin for any potential plan he might have in Eastern Europe or elsewhere in Europe?
Well, I think it certainly would encourage him to think that he can get away with more and be more aggressive. Donald Trump has already questioned whether or not the United States should support Article 5 of the NATO alliance in terms of coming to the defense of fellow NATO members. So if Putin decides to move against the Baltic states, would Trump respond in some way militarily? I don't know. I tend to question that Donald Trump would do the types of things that presidents heretofore have always done, which is to try to prevent that encroachment by the Soviet Union first and since then Russia. So I think it makes some sense for the European states, the NATO members, to be bolstering their capabilities, their defensive capabilities. I'm so very glad that we have Sweden and Finland in NATO now. But I also am concerned about the right-wing shift in countries that we see inside of Europe. We've seen it in Slovakia. So it's not just Hungary, but it's in Slovakia. We see it even in places like the Netherlands and Portugal and France, the rise of these right-wing groups that are being, I think, encouraged and bolstered by Russia. Russia is actively playing in the political environment in Europe. They're supporting candidates and political parties that have sympathetic policy positions or are willing to be manipulated by Moscow. And so it's very worrisome, especially for those American officials who really do see that the United States has an obligation to our allies and partners around the globe. But unfortunately, I think Donald Trump is is trying to say it's America first, and we're really not that concerned about what's happening in other parts of the world.
My final question, you paint a very worrying picture on this side of the Atlantic, I must say, but my final question to you is this. What we have now, it seems, is a wounded animal in Donald Trump facing into a long and exhausting presidential election campaign. And we remember Barack Obama in his pomp. He was youthful and vivacious and energetic and powerful, and he was a great orator. And if it was somebody like that on the other side, you would say he's going to take him down in debates and in the long campaign. What you have, though, is Joe Biden, who's anything but any of those things. Is that a big worry, I wonder, for the Democrats?
Well, I think there is a worry that Joe Biden, obviously at 80, 81 years old, is not as vibrant and as energetic as he once was. But he has recently given speeches like the State of the Union address, as well as some others, that he really has, I think, risen to the occasion. So I do think that Democrats are certainly hoping and counting on a very engaged Joe Biden.
Mick Mulvaney says he has dementia.
He does not. His physical being, you can see he's more frail than before. But as far as his mental acuity is concerned, I have not seen any diminution of that capability over the past number of years.
Okay. It's great to talk to you, I must say, and get your insights. John Brennan, former director of the CIA, thank you very much indeed for joining us.